Welcome to the Accelerators Podcast. We're bringing you oncology news and views with guests from all over the field. The discussions on this show are not medical advice, and they represent our own opinions and not those of our employers. The Accelerators is part of the Photon Media family of podcasts. You can check out all of our shows at photonmedia.org. All right, welcome back to the Accelerators Podcast. This is Matt Spraker, coming from Denver, Colorado, a radiation oncologist. And let's do our usual thing where the guests introduce themselves so we can link the voice to the name.
Hi, guys. My name is Shauna Stacey. I'm an ROCC coder and billing specialist with the Quick Code Success Team at Radformation. I'm coming to you from sunny and bright, hot Florida, so East Coast. Also coming to you guys with about 17 years of coding and billing experience. And I've worked almost every single avenue with radiation oncology, except for clinical.
You can tell Shauna has done this before because that was very crisp and polished like that. Now we should have made her go last. I'm Jason Pecta. I'm a radiation oncologist up here in the great state of Vermont. Which in contrast to Shauna, I had to fill my oil tank up 2 days ago, and it was 42 degrees last night. I bought a pumpkin about 2 hours ago. So that's where I'm at over here in Vermont.
Did it get like ripped away from you? Like it did here. Like it was 2 weeks ago, it was 90 degrees and I was like on the lake, and then I woke up and it was 50.
I've learned that you whatever Denver is doing is what's going to happen to me just like 48 hours in the future. So, I literally just have been saying that where it was hot, hot, hot. It was 90 degrees. And then now, filled up my oil tank. I had a fire going the other day. So yeah.
So this is fun. This is an exciting episode. It's actually a kind of a new era for us here. So it's our first sponsored content, of course, with our favorite, in my opinion, the coolest industry partner in radiation oncology, Radformation. So Shauna, thank you for joining us. And then it's also kind of a Photon Media crossover show, because I think if we were to try to do an episode about billing and not include Becta, that would be silly. And so, of course, we have you here. And then Simila is going to be joining us. And so I think today, really what we wanted to do was talk about billing, try to make it a little exciting. And we're gonna actually focus a little bit on your product for Radformation, Shauna, Quick Code, right?
Yes.
I thought one thing that we could actually talk about first is just sharing a little bit with Jason and I and Simil just about kind of why people should care about this. And I like to use myself as a good example, because my experience so far was like I graduated residency at the end. I learned a little bit about E&M billing because, I figured I was going to have to see consults and know how to bill them out. And so I was taught a little bit about that at the very end of residency. And then I got a talk from our clinic manager about how like I should make sure that my contract includes things that I've billed and not what we've received. And that was like the entire talk was just about that, which is really not very much about billing at all. And then I showed up at my first job, and believe it or not, I was the most knowledgeable person in my orientation about billing of the radiation oncologist. So this is something that's just not taught well at all in residency. And I would say that like it was something that I didn't want to think about, but I actually started to think about it, because you'll notice that once you start working, like instead of being counted like the number of hours, like you might, if you're like flipping burgers or something, you're actually being like sort of assessed by your clinical productivity, which I learned is related to billing. And then all of a sudden you might change jobs and maybe have a little bit less billing support, and then you have to be a little bit more involved. And so I think probably my experience is similar to a lot of radiation oncologists, where they're not taught anything. They're thrown to the wolves. They may or may not care. And then you eventually learn that it's important for your own your own job to really know what's going on in your clinic and kind of know about these things. Jason, you're a little bit more experienced, so maybe you can share about why you care, what your experience has been with it.
Yeah, it's it is weird to hear that, considering you've been in practice for longer than me. But it was exactly as you described, where this is what makes the world go round, and literally no one talk to me about this ever. And so it is like I have spent years now, which is also disturbing to think about, years just on my own memorizing every book that is available, trying to find every webinar, every scrap of every resource, and have spent, I think I probably started doing this maybe 2018, 2019. So, you know, 4 or 5 years doing this on top of, you know, that whole pesky medicine thing. And it is the most disappointing thing. And this is where the podcasting stuff came from too, is that there's just not much out there. That's the wild part. Like I went from when we were in medical school, M1, M2, it is an industry, just like medical education is an industry. There's just, it was too much. That was actually a lecture I did get back in M1, was there's going to be too many resources. So you got to pick one and stick with it. The opposite is true in RADONC. And so, you know, for me, I feel like I feel like I sort of understand it now, but after 4 or 5 years of dedicated work, but I feel like I could know so much more. And then I kind of flip around and talk to, you know, regular people who aren't OCD like me. And the gap of knowledge is just wild. And I know when we've talked with like Shauna and stuff, I get the distinct impression that we are the exception, that I don't think even what I consider our rudimentary knowledge of it is beyond what is normally encountered. And I just, that's kind of for how I find myself here, is I feel like we have to change that. So if I talk into a microphone, maybe one day we'll change that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's like, the other thing is like people, you know, sort of act like you're not supposed to talk about it. Right. And that part, there's sort of two ways to look at it. One way is just that, you know, like you don't talk about money, right? I think people like, that's kind of the American way. And I have my own opinions about that. We can leave them out of this. But the other is like, you know, the implication that if you talk about this, that's what you care about most. And I can actually tell you that the people that I've talked with about billing care very little about the consequences of it. They care more about the patient, right? And so they do what's best for the patient. And really what it's more about is trying to do what you want to do for the patient, but make sure you're billing appropriately. Because if you don't, you either aren't paid correctly for your treatment, and then your center suffers because the payments is what pays for all the staff and all the stuff that you want to do in your center. But then also there's this idea that if you don't bill correctly, kind of like if you don't do your taxes correctly, you can get in legal trouble, right? And so I was always kind of instilled with like the fear that if you don't have to care about it, but you should at least be aware of what's going on, because if you're not, like, you're going to be on the hook for somebody else's mistake. And so that was something else that kind of was taught to me, you know, after kind of in the transition from residency to independent practice.
Absolutely. So I like to go to talk about this as in, you guys know RVU language, you know, documentation, and you know, compliance. And so I like to break it down by 5 P's. That's your pay, that's your proof of work, your productivity, your problems, operationally, what's happening, and then your personnel accountability. And that kind of breaks it down for me when I think about billing. Whether we're freestanding, whether we're hospital-based, those are kind of the rule sets that we kind of play by. One thing they probably don't tell you until you take on your first job is, you know, from a compliance standpoint, if you go under investigation, it's your license that's under investigation. And what comes with that is you're on the chopping block and you're responsible for what everybody in your department is doing. And you have to understand and have the wherewithal and know that. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of options and education out there. And we all call it the very gray area in radiation oncology, because there's not one source that you can go to that will definitively tell you what's right or wrong. It's a matter of your interpretation. So we laugh that we deliver gray and we interpret gray, right? That's how I look at it whenever I talk about it. I think RadFormation is offering a tremendous solution. You know, we're offering QuickCode, which is a billing software. We're giving you a streamlined view of your charges. We're doing detailed checks. We're giving you CCI edits. Do people even know what that is, when two charges bump against each other and then one you leave on the table, the other one you get paid for? The documentation and what that means. Every one of you guys operate under a MAC with local coverage guidelines that tell you what you get paid for and how to document that on your medical necessity. I don't think a lot of time is spent on documentation and preparation of that. You know, we all get the very end product and it's undeveloped until we develop it, right? There's nothing that comes standardized. And so that's why we hear the word standardization and how are we going to make this work? And how do we document this? What's right? What's wrong? And what you will find is sometimes colleagues in our industry, they don't tell us. We go out there and we essentially sink until we learn how to swim. Kind of like where Jason has put all that time into the knowledge of billing and education. If we could have every physician take that time, we would definitely be making gains at the congressional level that we're not making, right? We need letters to go to them when we want something corrected. So it's kind of painful. But we are giving you guys a tool of efficiency, standardization, and I love to focus on the compliance tool. We have to get it right the first time. We have to get our charges right, our documentation right, our orders right. On the flip side of that, we got to know what our payers are going to pay. And I'll never tell a physician, you can't do what you want to a patient on the table, but I will tell you what you can and can't get paid. And that will matter when it comes down to your bottom line and how that facility is going to operate. And essentially, how we're going to come up with the capital to pay for all of these things that we want so we can stay on the latest and greatest.
Every radiation oncologist is like Jason, it would be a weird field.
So, you know, maybe. I've had some experience in multiple centers, and I think like as I've grown, the main thing with billing is that you got to get 80% of the way there as a clinician. And that, you know, you can even just read a few things or listen to Jason's podcast and you get to 80%. The grad level stuff is what Jason's focusing on, like the high level technical detail. Does the average radiation oncologist, the everyday, you know, staff member need to know the nitty gritty? Probably not. But we're doing a disservice to ourselves and our practices by not getting to 80% of the way there. And that's like, you know, when you look at industry or consulting or anything like that, if you can solve 80% of the problem, you're almost there, because that last 20%, the grad level stuff that Jason's doing, Matt's getting really good at it too. That's gravy, you know, that's bonus, that's dessert. And we, you know, but we're not even there to the 80% for most doctors. You tell them basic things and they are surprised. The people that talk about it online or social media are the people that are into it. Other people are just kind of observing and learning. And I can give an example from the practice I'm at. Great doctor that was there, built this beautiful practice, 2530 on beam, took care of 12,000 patients in his career over there. Never once charged 77470. And if you think about all the concurrent chemotherapy that you do, all the re-irradiation that you do, the complicated SRS and SBRT where you can consider adding the charge, it could be 75 to 100 patients a year more. Maybe, you know, with your guys' volume, with Jason's volumes, it could be 200 patients. A lot of this stuff is super complicated. If you look at how much you collect for that, it's not a small amount. If you times that by 25 years, we're talking like physicians for people, a navigator, better equipment, getting that CVCT upgrade, et cetera. You're like, it's not always, and I tell the staff this and they get it, like we're on the same page now. When I came in and we changed a lot of our billing, I'm salaried. I'm not going to hit my bonus. It's just not going to happen at my job, but I'm not doing it for me. It's not for personally me. It's for the hospital. It's for the practice to allow us to do the capital investments that make things better for patients, to allow us to get the efficiency that we need by buying things like QuickCode. If we're billing terribly, QuickCode is a great solution. But even if you're billing well, the optimization, the standardization, the streamlining of it, the lack of need to back check every single thing is so important. It saves everybody so much time. People in your office are doing billing things, not knowing that they're doing billing things. Everybody is involved with billing: front desk, nurse, therapist, physics. We're all providing services. We got to do this correctly. And I try to educate when I put in a code, like, this is why I'm doing this. This is why it's important. And yeah. Second thing, like that she mentioned, was if you get audited or you get in trouble, it's not the associates. It's the medical director. And without saying too much, I know this for a fact, and it's the medical director. That's who's going to have the biggest problem. And if the medical director says, well, gosh, I don't know about billing, the billing company does that, or the therapist does that, I don't put in those charges, that does not fly with the feds. you are a medical director of that practice. You are the financial director of that practice. You're the CFO of that practice. And you have to understand at least 80%. And that's why, like, I push Jason's stuff, the discussions we have on the podcast, RAD formation, so many tools, so many brilliant people that you can talk to that will offer advice, and they're not going to charge you for it if they're asking little things here and there, and they're very helpful. So just wanted to say.
And I just want to say one thing really quick, because this is something that I experienced as someone that was, like, you know, totally uneducated and then a little billing averse, I think, when it came up. And I definitely am curious about it. It's kind of fascinating. Shauna, all the confusion that you, like, talked about that's out there makes it kind of interesting to read about and things like that. But there is this, like, when I first started talking about it in my new job, there was this, like, the initial reaction was that I was, like, trying to be this doctor that was trying to, like, bill as much as I could to put in as much as I could in my own pocket. And that went away pretty quickly because I kind of just explained exactly what you just said, Simmel. And speaking to trainees specifically, I'd actually go one step further and ask people to think about jobs that they've had in the past, or if they haven't had a job, if you were to take a more simple job, right? Like, you show up, like, I talked about flipping burgers. I used to work in this, like, little grease pit place in my town, and you'd go in, and it was not like I'd walk in and the guy said, yeah, I'm going to give you a check every week and you just have to trust me. It's fine, right? This is what it is. This is what you're going to be working. Here's what you're making. It's never how it works, right? They give you an hourly rate. You know how many hours you clock in, you get a report for how many hours you did, and then the hours times the rate per hour should add up to the paycheck, and that's how it works. You would never just go on faith with, like, someone like that. And even if you're not the medical director, your contract is going to have some at least vague link to some kind of production measure that's linked to billing, usually an RVU. And I just personally, I think it's important for people to know the equation that calculates their pay. It's not unreasonable. It doesn't make you greedy. And so I think understanding 0% of this is not a good idea. I agree with Simmel. 80% is kind of where you need to be. And then if you try to get beyond that, you have to either be Jason or, like, be super interested, because it gets extremely frustrating with all the confusion out there, I think. Yeah.
No, I super agree with that. Because the one thing, and you know, I'm glad Shauna brought up a few points of that, because my experience too was with Matt, was that I was trained mostly implicitly in, like, the hidden curriculum, but sometimes definitely explicitly, that if you care about this, you are a greedy bad doctor. And that is kind of how, you know, radiation oncology has kind of lost the war with CMS to a degree, because, you know, we've just done this to ourselves. It's the Kitty Genovese effect, where, you know, it's not evil doesn't triumph from the, you know, evil people. It's the indifference of good people doing nothing. And so by learning about this, by you know, getting into it, and it doesn't make you amoral. You know, not having an opinion on these things is still having an opinion. You are choosing to remain ignorant, and that is a choice. And for me, it's interesting, when I came out of residency and into practice, the one thing I didn't really understand, because I'm a first generation college student, I'm a first generation doctor, I foolishly got into this thinking I would help people and change the world and whatnot, and that there was a meritocracy left, and all of that was not true. But I kind of made the deal with myself, or kind of worked on, all right, my decisions are going to affect lives. You know, it's literally life and death to decision situations I'm putting myself in. I accept the responsibility for that. And then all of our training is kind of geared towards that. The one thing I didn't expect, because I basically spent my career now in more or less solo or small practices, is that my work is the careers of, like, an entire department. So, you know, right now I'm in I am a solo radiation oncologist in rural Vermont, and my department is kind of odd, but, you know, there's at least a dozen people who basically their jobs depend on me. So my job is to make life and death decisions, and then there's at least a dozen people with families who base their lives on me and their livelihoods. And that kind of stress pressure was not something that I expected. And so it's, when you think about these things, I think it's really important to frame shift from, if you care about finances, you're a bad person, you're a bad doctor, and to realize that it's all tied together, and that if you're going to be a good doctor in 2023 and beyond in America, then this is just as important as memorizing, you know, the cell survival curves for, you know, HEC 293 cells. And so, like, More, it's more, arguably more. It's no Bragg Peak. It's no Bragg Peak, but I think that's kind of, that is actually how I got into the whole podcasting social media thing, was that somebody's got to be the ones out here making noise and taking the heat for it. And if, we are openly talking about these things, in a, what I consider to be a healthy and reasonable way, then hopefully that will kind of destigmatize it somewhat. But I can only imagine what it's like to be on the industry on Shauna's end, trying to pitch this to doctors who think that, you're the devil incarnate talking about these things. But I would not trade jobs.
So maybe we can, I think, we've given people a good idea of kind of why it's important and why people should care about it. And then if they go start to look at it, they're going to immediately be overwhelmed, I suspect. I certainly was, because there's a lot of sources. Like, how do you learn this? Because there's no, textbook of billing. There's actually multiple books. There's resources online. This is an easy place for us to sort of, give a little praise to ACRO, because for people who are ACRO members, they have some nice write-ups, and I'm actually going to link one of them. I think you do have to be a member to see it, but I'm going to link one of them because it's a nice description of how confusing this can be for common situations. One of their recent write-ups was about SBRT. And so it's very not simple. Now, if you are a new doctor and you've decided you want to care about this, and say you don't have time to make a podcast about it or study it all independently, you have a couple of choices, right? Is that true, Shauna, about how your clinic can actually implement sort of billing support?
Absolutely. I mean, there are, strenuous guidelines that you can look to. You can go to ACR, you can go to APEX. Those are guidelines that kind of lay out the framework of your operations within your department. And they don't address revenue, but they address operations. And a healthy operation has healthy revenue if you're taking the right steps and putting the right people in there to safeguard that. Revenue starts at check-in, from verification to checkout, to where does that claim go and what was on that claim? How does that documentation support it? You always have to ask the hard questions of, well, the doctor didn't approve that document. Well, what's your documentation policy? I don't know, 14 days, 21 days. Well, did you bill the claim out? Well, we did, because he's going to get to it. Well, at what point do you become out of compliance with that? At what point do you need to self-report those problems? And so there's just a lot to unpack there, but there's guidelines. Then you have state statutes. Those are your laws. Those tell you how you have to operate and what mandates you fall under. Every state lays out that framework differently. And then you have your federal guidelines that come out from CMS, your national coverage. I love personally, I go to ASTRO a lot. Yes, their guidelines, but you get the white papers, you get their coding sources. There's languages that make sense to you and you can kind of interpret that into real world. You always have to read on top of it. You have to ask other people what's going on in that industry. And I will tell any doctor, any administrator, really, if you want to know what's going on, hit your denial reports and find out what's happening. That is how you will know where your problems are. And you can start to ask those questions. If you haven't taken the steps that's required to lay out that framework around you that kind of gives you that security, look there first. Then what are your standard operating policies and procedures? Are you going to do SBRT for every single bone met? Well, what did your coverage guidelines say? Does the diagnosis meet medical necessity? Could you do anything else? Trying to figure that out. Or should you truly treat six sites at once? Is that beneficial to you financially? Probably not. Is it beneficial to your patient? Absolutely. Then we have that word toxicity. And how much does that manage when they have to come back to the clinic with problems and issues? And you're not paid for 3 months after you treat them unless they have a new diagnosis. So there's just a lot there. And there's a lot of, you can talk to great administrators that will tell you how their program operates. And those administrators are telling us, well, we don't know what happens with the claim when it leaves us. We don't know if it paid or not. We got the claim through the door. Well, it does matter, because when it comes down to it, did it need to be voided next month? And consequently, that's voided from your RVUs. And then you're like, hey, I did 20 simulations, but I only got paid for 16. What happened? Oh, well, there were four voids because of they were repeats or they weren't covered by insurance. Well, why does that matter to me? Well, I should still get paid for that. Well, you're not, because it's getting voided. And who discussed the write-offs with the physicians? Did the administrators take the time to inform them that that was even happening?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just to ground it a little bit, because I think if people know nothing about billing, that might have sounded a little confusing. My guess is that most trainees or first job like graduates, they're going to get some small talk about E&M billing, because I feel like every place I've been, we've gotten that talk where they tell you about when you do it. What I mean by E&M is a clinic visit. So you do a consult and you probably learn that there's different levels that you can bill that consult. And or if you bill by time, if you're smart like me, you bill by time, then you can do it by different time levels that you've spent with the patient. And most people do get that talk, right? And so that's a really nice example of a very specific single code that has rules around it that doctors are taught pretty well. Primarily, my guess is because they're the ones that are working that code and then billing it out on their own, right? Because it's all directly related to the doctor's work. Then these trainees should realize that every other single thing you do in the clinic for the patient has a code attached to it, like most of the things, right? So if you end up taking a KV film to set up the patient, that has a code. If you deliver treatment, that has a code. CT stimulation, treatment planning, like the act of like thinking about what you want to deliver to the patient, prescribing a dose, that all has a code, and you're not going to get that talk for those codes. And so that's really what you're talking about, is that there's lots of different sources and there's variable levels of administrative support. People should not walk away from this podcast thinking they're going to be left on their own and they're going to have to like write them all down on paper and send them out on their own. But, sorry, I forgot that whenever you're around, I have to like, it is possible. But every job I've had, there's some support, right? But it goes back to that thing, like, do you want it to be a black box where you have no idea and your little report at the end of the year is what you get? Or do you want to have some sense of what's going on, to understand kind of how those things are going? And I personally found when I started to get into this that those Astro resources, the Acro ones, were very helpful. You can go to the Medicare website and look at those as well, but they're very confusing. One last thing I'll quickly say before I let other people talk is, like, I got to a place where I was 80% of the way there, and I thought I was pretty well-versed. And then I had a patient, and then I realized that that patient had a special, what they call an LCD, or right? Yeah, I don't even know, right? So my point is that the rules were different for that one patient. And that's how complicated this is. And one of the things that I liked when we were talking with you, and we'll get to this in a second, was that, like, this is one of these things where I'm just not sure, unless you are a very special type of doctor, that you're going to be able to keep all these rules in your head. So I think understanding the support you do have is really important for that reason specifically, because it has to run at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, that Astro billing guidelines, they charge for those. They're not cheap, and a lot of places don't have them. It's not just that it's a good resource. It's almost the opposite. It's not that they're reading the rules and then writing it always. It's the other way. It's sort of like the Bible for the payer or for the third party. So I do some third party work. I work for OncoHealth part time. We do prior authorization. When we have a billing question, we go to the Astro billing guide. So it's kind of like a little bit of a circle, right? Like, because they're using that to define billing, but the billing company is referring to the book to decide what to cover and how to cover it. And that's what we use as our resource. That's our like fundamental Bible for this. And the thing is, the payers and the third parties do have the copy. Not only do they have the copy of the billing guide, they know it word for word, page for page. I was caught on a call a couple of years ago for complex acidosis for bone mets. They wanted me to do that. And Evacor said, well, that's what Astro says to do. And I don't have this billing guide in front of me. And it's like, okay, if that's what Astro says to do. Finally, afterwards, I did it 2D. And I looked up the billing code. I looked up the page. And what they were referring to was that bone mets are an example of what you can do complex isodose for. They did not say every single bone met should be complex isodose, but many people practicing between 2015 and 2020 probably came across that talk from Evercore. We got to know that coding book, unfortunately, or somebody in your office has to know that coding book, because it is what the payers and the third parties are relying on, which is it's backwards. I don't know if that's an example of capture, but it's sort of odd to me when Astro is the one who's providing the interpretation to the billing company.
Similar, you invoked regulatory capture before I did. That's pretty good. I guess two points that are both really important from that. So one, we're going to now refer to me as trying to get my master's in coding. So that's I'm a psychopath with just like the insane sort of trying to memorize every code that was ever written. And so, but Shauna's point is incredibly important, where it's interesting for hospitals who act like really they care so much about financials that their actions kind of are different. And they don't seem to actually kind of follow through on that. And so what I mean by that is you know, we get all these budgets of metrics and you have to do X, Y, and Z. And so, you know, I will ask the questions that Shauna is talking about. So for example, you know, because of my strange setup, I have both Epic and Cerner and Aria, and lots of things. And so I'll run like my pro fee report in Epic on the Epic dashboard, and I will get like, you know, a WRVU accountability sort of, you know, a spreadsheet. And so that'll have, you know, on bad months, 1600 WRVUs or whatnot. Like it's a lot. So then I will get like an official sort of report from the university, you know, halfway into the next month, and they're never the same. And so, you know, I started to try to track that down. And by that, I mean, in this current setup, there's not a lot of people who can be considered my boss. There's like three people between me and Bernie. And so like, you know, I stopped short of just going to Bernie, and literally even all the people who are either upstream of me in the organizational chart or upstream or downstream of me in the billing pathway, I would just hit dead ends, like literally. And so that's me who spends all my free time doing this. And then I try to follow it through to, you know, everyone short of the government. And don't feel bad or discouraged. Like I do agree with Matt where it's not, I worry sometimes that people will walk away from these things and it's just all doom and gloom, but you know, it's not like they just kind of send you off to the wolves, but and even if you can't figure it out, well, I can't even figure it out. And I spend an inordinate amount of time on this. And, you know, it's really interesting. And of with Simmel's point about the payer. So kind of that is 100% correct, where, you know, it's kind of the tail wagging the dog. But so even with that being true, and even with me not being able to track down like where the discrepancy is, at the end of the day, I'm batting 1,000 with every peer-to-peer I've ever had, like, you know, for the past 2 years. So it's worth your time. Even if the only thing people walk away from this from thinking we're all insane and that this isn't worth learning or anything, I haven't lost yet for any, like, so what Simmel's example there, that's not a thing that happens. And that's kind of the benefit at the end of the day, where there's not a lot in our control, which is kind of the essence of being a doctor, is we're all just kind of adrift in these gray oceans of ambiguity. But the things that can be in your control should be in your control. And there is a benefit to learning the 80%, and that's not getting trapped on that call with, you know, a payer saying, oh, complex isodose. And you're saying, okay, well, I guess, you know, you can at least battle that one thing. But yeah, it's quite an interesting system we've built here.
And so one thing that we should mention, because we love Radformation and this is the show about Radformation, is that let's just say that, let's take a step back and realize that we all work in these practices. There are different ways that these things are supported. And I think the point we would like to get across in this show is about your product QuickCode and how it's a little bit different than what has been out there in the past. Because if everyone's very confused, that's right, that we're trying to give you a feel of what it's like to try to work on this stuff. It is too confusing for a doctor to do this fully with their time, because you have to be a doctor, right? That's kind of like what we want people to do with their time in clinic. And so there's different ways to kind of go about doing this. You certainly can just like try to do the best you can with your billing support that you have. a lot of clinics historically, and I've seen this, have used consultants. So these are like companies that'll come in with actual human beings and will come in and review some of your charts. And then they will make recommendations about ways that you might change your procedures, like you were saying, Shauna, so that your coding and your billing is optimized for whatever you're trying to achieve in your practice, right? But what's new and what you guys are offering is actually an automation solution that is, obviously it's built by human beings, but it's not like a person comes to your clinic and does it, right? It's actually a piece of software that you put on your computer. I believe Simmel has this, so he knows it a little bit. I don't actually use it in my own clinic, but that's what we're talking about here with QuickCode. Is it's actually an automation software that helps take like a little JSON and put them in your desk, and then he tells you what to bill out.
And no pressure, Shauna, but I also, while I have a lot of other reformation things, I don't have ClearCode. I want ClearCode. So Shauna, I want whatever you're about to say to be what I play to my administration tomorrow. So, you know, no pressure.
QuickCode, right?
Yeah, QuickCode.
Oh yeah, that's all the, yeah, you guys got really cute with all the names. See, this is why if you own too many of them, you just get lost on them. But here's the pitch. Just to my VP.
I don't actually have it yet. I've seen it at places and I'm working on it for our entire Prime Health system to get it. So I know of it, but I don't have experience with it myself in my clinic, just to clarify.
Yeah. And so maybe Shauna, can you tell us like what this actually is and how a doctor might like see it in their clinic and why it might help them be less confused than I am on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. So, you know, QuickCode is a billing QA software. We're linking right up to either your Aria SQL Server or your Mosaic SQL Server. We see every single spot that's viewable in your EMR. We're looking at your documentation, your charge capture, your notes, your journals, your appointments. We look at the gambit. We break that into phases and we kind of do an evaluation of expected on what you're prescribing, what you're planning in either Eclipse or Pinnacle, what your images are. And we're telling you kind of with best billing practices and expectations of what you prescribed, what to expect. Then we take a look and analyze your code capture. What did you report from your pre-simulation all the way down to your last on-treatment visit? We kind of create a system with our software that tells you, yeah, you got your E&M, you got your clinical treatment planning charge, you got your simulation, your treatment device, the whole gambit. And we also link up detailed checks within that software to check for the documentation. Did you complete it? Was it signed? What's the date of service? That's basic kind of compliance factors that we're looking for. And then we also run CCI edit checks on that, MUE edit checks, and we give you a full descriptive picture. So Matt, if you're in the clinic and you want to look at your 15 patients that you charge that day and kind of do a check-in on your revenue, you can log right into our software, run your work list that's set up to you specifically, and it's going to give you kind of what we call these green check marks and red X's, and it's going to give you a pass or a fail. It's a pretty simple option to look at, but you're going to know, hey, is my billing team, are they on their game? Did the therapist get everything out? Did we catch yesterday's images? I can't remember if I signed them or not. We're going to tell you every bit of that real time. What's going on? Did I get my images done? Somebody can run that work list at 7 a.m. in the morning and look and give you that reminder email. I have personally been one of those people that had to check 300 images on the morning before 8 a.m. and send out email notifications to my doctors and say, you have to sign it or you're going to miss revenue. I had to put a dollar amount to get them to sign it. We now can run you a report and we can run you a work list that will tell you that. On top of that, now we can tell you if you completed and signed your simulation note and your letter of medical necessity for your IMRT. So that's a big deal because how often do you forget to sign documents or complete documents? Do you have the right team? And it may not even be their fault in front of you to give you that document. You've just saw 45 patients. You're barely breathing. The machine's calling you to come set up a sim. You've got to get this image signed right now because they were treated yesterday and they're coming up to their minute before the gantry turns on. It's overwhelming. So you guys barely have time to think sometimes we're giving you a product that can let you look at what happened yesterday, what's happening today, and kind of take some of the thinking out of it. So at the end of the month, things make sense to you. You know, what are you, how many simulations did you do this month? How many plans did you do? Furthermore, how many replans were required because of bad simulations, backlogs that deflate? How is that billed? Did we bill the payer? Did we absorb that? We are designed for billing optimization in our tool set, but then we have human error. We have patient toxicity, scenarios, social challenges. We have to kind of decide, well, not every person's going to fit into that box. So what did we not bill out? Well, the payers say we should bill everything, but they're not going to pay us. Then they're going to track us on the mistakes that we make, right? And then we're going to have these lovely things called RAC audits. And then they're going to be, hey, you didn't sign your document like 3 days after the charge. Why not? Well, now you have to send this fancy form to CMS because it doesn't look like you were attached to that face-to-face encounter. It's a whole nother conversation. But we're giving you a tool set to handle this. You can look at it. Your administrators can look at it. Your therapist, your symmetrist, your physicist, your coders. Everybody can use this tool, look at every phase. And I will tell you, 17 years of doing this, I would have loved to have went back and did a treatment audit on every patient that ever completed treatment with me to check my own work. And I couldn't find time to do that. This does it every single day. It gives you the phase. You can hide it and collapse it once you've resolved everything, move forward, or you can look at it and give yourself a tool to know how to expect those charges, what happened, what am I missing, build reports off of that, give yourself reminders. I want to call it the latest and greatest, and the standardization that we can help lead you guys to, as well as some insurance of compliance, means the world to me, because that's a big part of my conversation when somebody asks me a question. Well, are you ACR accredited? Are you APEX? Are you nothing? What's your internal policies and procedures? Those answers have to come, and we can help set up safeguards in our software to ensure that things happen the way that they're supposed to, and that you essentially are using our software for billing optimization and a compliance tool, if you will.
I thought we were all smiling, I think, when you were talking about that, because one thing I want to just say is that you cannot care about billing. Like, you can disagree with all of us for sure, but somebody will in your center. There's no question about that. And that's where compliance comes in. I can think of all the ways that I've been, you know, gently reminded or not so gently reminded to do all of these little things that you have to do for each patient to remain compliant. And they will tell you, right? And so having a tool that like tells you that up front before, I have some funny ways that this has been handled in different departments that I've worked in, but I mean, that's a big deal, because you can decide that you don't care, but you're not off the hook even if you don't care. That's kind of an important point there. Sorry, some other things.
Yeah. So that what she's talking about, that one of the things when we spoke last time is what we are doing in my clinic and other places I've worked at for the weekly notes is you're manually checking to make sure that you have as many weekly notes as you need. You did, you know, 44 fractions, so you need 9 notes. So somebody has to go into Epic, and then you can't just go into Epic and count 9 because there's holidays and there's mistreatments. And so that 1 through 5 is a little bit tricky. And you don't want, the worst thing is doing an OTV on like fraction 14 and 15, right? That's just dumb.
And right, you miss 16 through 20.
And you miss 16, and it happens because of the holidays and stuff. So someone actually goes back, checks it with the ARIA schedule, and then I get a handwritten note on my desk with what I'm missing. And this nurse is overworked to begin with. She's doing navigator work. She's doing nursing for our patients. She's runs tumor board. She has a lot of jobs. Like, we wear a lot of hats at my organization. So, you know, these things that she's doing for us, not only is it important for the center, but it personally matters. And I can give you another personal example. Is many practices now or community hospitals with a group are doing pooled bonuses. And so what that means is that the bonus is shared by the partners or by the associates, but it could be threshold based. And literally where I was working, I was at 8,800 RVUs for the year. If I get to 9,000, it's the difference. It's $100,000 difference. 100,000, like 8999, I make X. 9,000, I make 100,000 plus X. And so I was short by about 180 RVUs for that year. And I just don't have the knowledge or interest at the time. But you know that the calculation is like 17 RVUs a month. Could we find 17 RVUs that I missed per month? Damn straight you could with me. I mean, I'm not perfect, but like I miss notes all the time. I miss charges all the time. It happens. And if you have a way to attach the encounter to the note and quickly view it, it literally takes 2 seconds at chart rounds for each patient just to make sure that they're clear. Did they, you know, did you see the patient? Is there a note? And someone does that. You don't even have to talk about it. It's a green check.
Can I just interject for a second? It's pretty weird that your bonus kicked in at 9,000 when the average RVUs per year is 10,000. But anyway, keep going. Sorry.
Yeah.
What you're saying though is that anyone that installs this product will add $100,000 to their salary, right?
I guarantee you $100,000 raise, and Radformation is on the hook for it. So that's...
to be clear, we don't mean any of that.
Yeah, make sure you put a clarifying clip into the middle of the segment. But it personally does help you. It helps the center. Like this stuff is, it's such small details, but it's tedious as heck. And that is exactly the sort of thing software is made to do. And, you know, future AI is meant to do. It's this detailed, tedious stuff that's manual and not challenging. It doesn't require, it's not cerebral, but it has to be done. And it has to be done in an organized fashion. And it really literally can mean $100,000 difference for you.
You know, I think the misconception is too that AR software is going to replace people. People still need to do the job. People still need to put the notes in. You still need support. You need good framework around you. We're just giving a tool so that the left arm is talking to the right arm and that it makes sense. And we're like Samuel said, the OTV checks, such a simple thing. I used to lose somewhere between 10 and 12 hours a week as a coder, going through and manually looking at OTV notes and finding opportunities real time. That's time that I could have used to work appeals and actually work things that would have made a difference, getting money that's sitting in my 30 to 60 to 90 today revenue cycle that gets kind of neglected. Like, hey, how can I get that claim paid faster? But here I'm focusing on OTVs and trying to make sure everything gets through the door. We run that automated tool on OTVs. That's one of my favorite things. And I'll tell you all day long, the fact that we can access a prescription without having to run a report or look at the summary or figure something out, as a coder working after the fact with you guys, that's the world to me. Because Aria and Mosaic, their tools aren't friendly to us, to the coders, to the billers. If we're not in the clinic and have the knowledge base in that system, we have to fight for what we want. And here's the fact, you guys don't have time to answer the emails. The nurses don't have time to answer the emails. And sometimes we're going on wild goose chases to try to find things. And it was, well, we did the letter of medical necessity note, but it saved under the consent form. Well, how was I supposed to know that, you know? And how often does that happen when you don't save something or it toggles around? Well, we're going to tell you in Quick Code. We're also going to tell you Labor Day happened and you missed about 16 OTVs. If you would have moved them one day forward or 2 days forward, you would have captured all of those. So we're going to find you those misses and you can start having conversations of, well, are my OTVs scheduled on my calendar? Who's keeping track of these? Is it the machine? How do I know the patient didn't walk out the front door rather than check in the back office with me? Like, where's the accountability? Because often OTVs get moved around the fluid schedules that everybody talks about. How do you reconcile that at the end? Because you don't attach a billing event to it necessarily if it's done well outside of Epic and your documentation. So how are you doing that? Another awesome tool set that we're offering you guys. Yes, it takes configuration and setup. We have those conversations. You get a team of people behind our software. We talk about compliance. We give you support. We provide education. We can talk about standardization. We have large facilities that we work with, and we can change their appointments to the same thing so that if they're sitting in Vermont, California, or Florida, they can standardize all of their appointments and we can set them up a system. We can also standardize documentation. We give a lot of options for you guys through configuration and setup. We have a starting goal and we have an end goal. And that end goal is constantly moving because you get it where you want it. And then you see, I want more. And we're constantly developing because of that, which is super exciting. And the thing about Radformation is we give you what you want because we're clinicians just like you guys. So we're providing that option to you real time.
So one thing I wanted to do, just because in the interest of time here, we're kind of closing in on the end. So one of the things that people may not have gathered, if you're not at the 80% level we kind of talked about, is that radiation billing is extraordinarily complex because there's lots of procedures and different combinations you can do them in. But in addition, there are different rules in different states and in terms of like how things are reimbursed and what you can and can't do. And then even within a state, there can be different like insurance policies or types of insurance that have different rules. And so what we wanted to do to close out the episode was when we were talking about this, I was actually pretty impressed with how comprehensive QuickCode is and the rules. You know, I mean, automation is only as smart as you teach it to be, right? And so what you all have taught it to do is pretty comprehensive. And so I said, okay, well, Photon Media has like this guy that, you know, knows everything about billing, Jason. So we wanted to take our best billing person and try to come up with something. And then Radformation put you forward as their best person. And so I want you guys to kind of go head to head here. And I think you came up with something, or Jason tried to come up with something that could sort of break QuickCode, right? And so where did we land on that?
So I really like, because Shauna, you know, fourth wall breaking someone when we were talking via email, and Shauna's like answer in terms of when we were talking about this was just as comprehensive as I would have done, in that usually I'm the one writing dissertation emails in chain. So I'm not quite sure how, I feel like I lost on this one, but you know, that's all right. They can always be around too. So, because the one that I came up with, and I imagine this is incredibly relevant for most of us in many sense. It's and it's kind of what Shauna had mentioned a little bit ago, is multiple site simultaneous treatments. So, like, for example, you know, I had a patient who was coming to me for SBRT, and it was just for a kind of standard oligomet SBRT case. And in the consult, we were talking, and he was a renal cell. So obviously, he was not optimally functioning with his kidneys, as in he didn't really have them. And so in this conversation, in addition to the metastatic cancer, he had very severe osteoarthritis that he had been managed, you know, kind of really aggressively throughout the years through various other things. But now NSAIDs were totally off the table for him because, again, no kidneys. So in the conversation, I offered the low dose radiotherapy of the 3 gray and 6 fractions. And so with the 3 gray and 6 fractions every other day, and I like the 5 fraction SBRT personally. So it was 5 fraction SBRT to a different anatomical site. Then, you know, the question is, all right, what of those charges are we going to lose? And so, you know, it's, I have, and then, so we get into kind of as with the max, geography matters for radonc billing so much more than most people possibly realize. I don't understand how this is not like a commonly talked thing. So, you know, in certain geographic regions, you can, if you want to try to capture both those courses, because again, what frustrates me is that you are doing the work. So there's nothing tricky about this because you are doing two separate treatments. It's the same patient, it's the same time. But it's not like the work is the same. It's not like you're trying to get away with anything. You are literally doing two, you know, separate courses of radiotherapy. And the way it's built in, you will often just lose any reimbursement for half of that. So, you know, and none of this is considered billing advice, obviously. So I prefer the zipper method of, you know, on Monday, you do the SBRT. On Tuesday, you do the osteoarthritis. On Wednesday, you do the SBRT and go back and forth. You know, I know for a fact that doesn't work in certain geographies and does than others. But so my question is, Shauna, is, all right, if we have that knowing with your system here, how would that kind of look to the system, and what would be the sort of outcome, and what kind of human interactions would you need there?
Yeah. So, you know, our system, as I've said before, it's set up to optimize billing. It's set up to show you optimally what you should receive on those two separate treatment courses. Those are two separate plans and two separate modalities, right? They each come with different rule sets. So SBRT, there's services that are left on the table. If you use IMRT planning, chances are you're going to use IMRT planning. For 3D conformal, you kind of get it all. But what if you have a higher modality? So our software kind of blends everything together. You have the two different plans and you optimize what's expected on those plans. The human has to organize what they're going to leave on the table, which is hard. We have to force the software, and we have a verification override set up where, well, they did one simulation for that SBRT spine and they included that hip at the same time. Two different modalities. Well, the rule of thumb, you should build the highest modality for the planning. You will leave things on the table, but to flush, higher RVUs for the IMRT planning, better reimbursement. But if you are going to take the time and organize SBRT one day, 3D conformal next day, why not optimize that in your clinic and bill it because you did it? What if that patient had an adverse effect from something that you did and you didn't report that 3D conformal treatment to the payer and they go back and try to sue you because of a problem, but you never reported that charge? Underbilling, not billing is fraud. So you should report it, right? Now, revenue has to sort out, what are we going to leave on the table? What are we going to bill? What are we going to write off, which is a bigger conversation. We tell you what you can get. You decide what you leave on the table and where you leave that. Maybe you should go the bounds of putting some modifiers on there, writing up some medical necessity, and actually trying to appeal certain services. We know they're going to deny. We understand that, but we're going to go through that process of, hey, sometimes it is medically necessary to run this for the patient. We've got the 90-year-old living in a rural area who's driving an hour because he's on a Medicare managed care plan. And essentially, he can't even afford to come, so he can only get here 5 treatments. We'll optimize the highest level. We're going to try to fight for the lowest level. And our software is going to tell you what you are leaving on the table. But at least you know when you're prepared and you can make more conscious decisions on how to treat, document, and manage that patient. And documentation is key. Drop your claims. Try to fight for it if you can. If you don't have that wherewithal with your revenue team and they're not willing to fight, you should be involved on what's left in the table. Somebody should come to you and say, is the IMRT more important or is the 3D conformal more important? And you should have some rule sets to play by. It shouldn't come down to the coder reviewing the charge. It should come down to, hey, this is the plan that I want billed. This is the plan I spent the most time on. This is what was authorized and this is what I want you to fight for. But if you can get this, if we organize it out the right way, then let's try. But if not, then hey, I'm cool with that being written off. No problem.
We did not plan on Shauna saying underbilling is fraud. That that was not a plant, but I love that. I can't. This what a great episode. I give this a 10 out of 10.
Shauna, the reason he says that is all three of us rail against that comment. There has not been one fraud case for underbilling in the history of the United States. You have to enrich yourself in some way. It's a canard. Like you can't, you know, the government's not going to spend money to sue you to pay you money.
Absolutely. That's correct. And they will let you operate on ignorance is above the law. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know that certain local coverage guidelines expired 2 years ago, they're not going to fill you in on that. That's not their job. They want to keep the money in their pockets, not give it to you.
We're going to have to bring Sean McBride on to talk about Supreme Court, like kind of policy or whatever they call it.
I won that little exchange, which is very hard because he is just as good as legality as he is at medicine for some reason. Like it's amazing. I have a case I kind of wanted to ask you about, Sean. It's something I deal with on the prior auth side as the reviewer, and we're stuck. Multiple large institutions like to treat prostate cancer with a SBRT boost. So they do external beam with IMRT for 25 fractions, and then they'll do a CyberKnife boost.
Okay.
Two major institutions that I know do this. I don't mind naming them. They have series on it. NYU and UCSF do this. So the first one I received that was billed at 28 or 25 fractions of IMRT, and then they did the 3 fractions of the boost as just 3D conformal.
Okay.
And I did a peer-to-peer with the guy because I felt like he was underbilling. And he said, well, most payers say that you're past five fractions and it's the same ICD code, so you can't do SVRT after you do IMRT. So they just said, we've already got denied. We just call it 3D. And then another place, they want it as SVRT, but they will accept it as three IMRT fractions additional. So 28 fractions. But CyberKnife is not inverse planned. And so what is correct and what is the best option for those doctors to do, those institutions?
Yeah. So if you don't mind my asking, in the quest for the boost, did they re-simulate and create new plans for those patients and go the bounds of doing the medical necessity in their fight for trying to get it authorized?
There was no additional letter of medical necessity. It's unclear to me whether they did an additional simulation. Most people don't re-sim for prostate, but is that something you would suggest in this case?
You know, when you're going to change a modality and go from IMRT to a higher specialty modality, rule of thumb is you should, if it's medically necessary, it is appropriate to re-simulate. And when you work off of the initial plan to that boost plan and do a comparison, part of your medical necessity is documenting the change from the initial plan to that boost plan. And then using what changed as part of your medical necessity on that argument for why CyberKnife would have an advantage over the IMRT. Now, CyberKnife is another thing we can talk about. People bill 3D conformal planning all day long for CyberKnife, and they're not using 3D conformal planning. They're using IMRT. And under billing the planning, if you will, it happens all over the place. LCDs, yeah. I see Matt's look.
Why do you think that's... Why do you
Matt
think,
just lasered it on that.
Like, why is it IMRT instead of 3D?
Well, it depends. Well, here's the rule. You should bill what you're planning for. If you're using inverse, you should bill inverse. If you're using forward planning, you should bill forward planning. But then you have these fancy things called coverage guidelines, diagnosis coverage guidelines, that tell you what will pay and what won't pay. We used to have those at a national level for SVRT and SRS, and they went away. So a lot of people have operated on the side of caution, and they've stayed with medical necessity and LCD options that are no longer present because they don't want to take the risk. And it's, we're doing it because we've always been doing it, and we don't want to challenge that. Or because they had a payer reimbursement specialist tell them, it should always be 3D conformal. Bill that all the time, no matter what you do. Well, that's wrong. So I think the documentation and the medical necessity there is important, Simal. If they did re-simulate for some reason, anatomical change, weight loss, node, and that, you know, node, what's encompassed in that boost, I think is important to know. And then that should justify the higher modality, in my opinion. I think it's worth the argument for the additional plan. Now, they can at least get their dose calculations in their MLC, even if they don't build that plan, and then shoot for the CyberKnife CPT codes. They just need to have their documentation in order whenever they submit that to you guys. And it's, I think to me, it's worth the peer-to-peer. All they're going to do is say no. And if you have a backup plan, you know, when you create that CyberKnife plan, if they say no, you have the backup plan there. Do I think we should go down to 3D conformal? I think that's underbilling, definitely. You're not optimizing your best option there, in my opinion, of the technology, patient experience, billing. I definitely think you should, at a minimum, stay with IMRT. At a maximum, fight for what you think is medically necessary and what you've taken the time to document. And I would want to see a change. What is the change on that?
And well, there's not a change. It's just dose escalation. Because if you do it with brachytherapy boost, it counts as a new episode and there's no question about the boost. It's that
right. This
is still a form of external beam.
Right.
It's not changing anything. It's just you want to give a higher dose to that. to the.
And I think you should just justify why you're giving that higher dose and why you need to use that modality to justify that higher dose. That's my opinion.
Just to piggyback on that, I know we're starting to go long here. How does the software handle adaptive replanning, if at all? Because that's kind of a very difficult thing right now.
So yeah, it's definitely we are customizing out templates based on what the facilities are doing. We have to interview the facilities to see what safeguards they have in place. You know, you have a gambit of payers that are going to tell you bill every plan, put your modifiers on there, fight it, show your medical necessity. That doesn't mean they're going to pay it. Just because you bill it doesn't mean you're going to get paid. But should you report it? I know at the national level, they're trying to get specific coding to handle that adaptive planning. I think it is important for us to report what we're doing to our CMS payers so they can see that we're adapting real time, even if we're not getting paid, because they track that. They look at that. And that helps us build our case as we're trying to fight for that. So we can build customization into expecting plans, kind of, we'll call it the off-label treatments, where if we have to shift into a plan each day, we can add planning into phases and expect that, look at the documentation. You're obviously going to have to rely on your user for QuickCode to decide how they submit that charge and if they do and what processes they have in place. But we can give you an expectation and give you kind of a rule set to play by with those specialized things and customize to what your end goal is.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. And I think for people that, again, if you're below that 80% line, you may have no idea kind of what specifically is being talked about here. But at the end of the day, there's kind of two important points, I think, for the product, right? Is one, people should realize that for both of these situations that Simil and Jason brought up, it would give you a suggestion, right? So you don't have to know. You can install this and it would give you a suggestion for both the two site and then the boost of off after prostate. And then what you said, what I actually was most surprised by when we were prepping this show, just is that this is something that there's a lot of work that's happening at RadFormation behind the scenes to customize and update this product so that it is on top of all the policy changes, which happen like more than once yearly, right? There's like lots of policy changes across the country that are happening. And then additionally, if you have these weird situations where they may not be sort of sussed out yet, like adaptive radiotherapy, you're actually working with the customer to implement expectations inside the automation software so that they can actually still use it for those things that are not as common. I think personally, that's really cool. I mean, that's like, if you just look at all the other automation products you have, it's you guys are just knocking out all of these little annoyances that doctors would love to not think about, but should. So hopefully people do take that theme away, because that was really the message that I got and what I greatly appreciate about RadFormation. Yeah.
They're definitely a unicorn in our industry.
Jason is. I'm not.
Well, I was going to say, I know RadFormation wants to be unicorn in terms of a Silicon Valley startup sense of the word unicorn, but that that is, I think, kind of really important for and Shana said this a bit ago, but basically that the AI is not here, or automation is not here, to take our jobs. I know I made a snarky tweet, something to that effect, with the Radong GPT preprint article earlier on Twitter, and tagged our good friends at RadFormation. But you know, it was meant mostly to I'm able to do those tweets in my insane sort of solo role job, because in my case, Auto Contour is freeing me up to actually be a human or my version of a human for a little bit, and it's allowing us to do more what we traditionally consider doctorly things, which is talk to patients and kind of keep up on things and colleagues, and I'm really excited for what that allows me to do. Obviously, it extends my powers in terms of how much work I am able to do as a single doctor, which has other implications. But I don't think that people should be afraid of this, although it's technology and inevitably we're just going to have Luddites afraid of things. But I think it just really helped me just do more. And as Matt and Simil know, I already sleep 3 hours a night as it is. So maybe doing more is not optimal, but that's just some other people's opinions.
This has been great. Matt. Yeah, no, this has been really great, actually. I think this is, I like this because we're going to title it something like why you should care about billing and how not to care, which is exactly what I would like, because I think that, as Jason said, what we really want to be doing is the doctorly things, but we all want to make sure our clinics are well supported. And it's like, I was just complaining to my wife that like we had this lawyer for like, you know, an unrelated issue. And it was like, I mean, they bill you for every single second that you like they do anything. Right. And we don't work like that. And so I guess we've put ourselves in a system where we need automation to make sure that we get paid appropriately, but I'm happy that it's here. Greatly appreciate you coming on the show to talk about it. And look forward to what else we can get, you know, from that information. If you can start sort of writing my consult notes, that would be fantastic. I would love that.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Like, I have tremendous respect for all of you guys for caring, like starting this conversation, bringing it to the table. It really matters. And you're giving voices to people who I don't even think they know they need the voice, but you're giving them that option. And I absolutely love that. So tremendous respect goes out from my end. Love what you guys are doing.
No, I appreciate that.
So, this Astro, please come visit Rad Formation's booth this weekend, this upcoming weekend. I'll be there on Sunday. Happy to meet you guys.
Let me put this out there and we'll make... This is going to be edited. We have to. Let's say this because this is So we actually are doing a lot with RadFormation at Astro in just a couple of weeks, and so I would encourage everyone to go and meet Simul at the RadFormation booth 1417, and it's going to be Sunday, October 1st at 4 p.m. I actually just spoke to. I saw like some trainee thing is happening and I said everyone should walk over and meet Simul at the booth at 4 o'clock after that. And I'm excited for your guys' booth. I'm sure it's going to be as fun as you all are. And then I'm going to be joining an event. You guys are doing it's called the user meeting. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. The user meeting. And that's going to be at the deck at Moonshine Flats on Monday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. I will be there. But I'm really looking forward to that event. It should be a lot of fun to kind of hang out together and meet people. So I'm really looking forward to seeing all of you in San Diego in just a couple of weeks.
So there was some talk of me being in a dunk tank. And the unfortunate thing was there was far too much interest in this from academic chairman. So we decided not to do it because I can't swim very well. And
yeah, we had to talk one of them off the ledge from using an airsoft gun. That's what I heard.
All right, everyone. Have a great night. Thank you again, Shauna, for coming on, Jason, Simul, and we will see you all soon.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you liked our show, please subscribe and leave us a rating. Also, head to photonmedia.org and check out the rest of our content. We hope you're having a great day and look forward to seeing you again soon.